Welcome back to another episode of Sunday World Engage. My name is Mbalenhle Zuma, and today we have Nwabisa Mavuso, who is a filmmaker, an LGBTQ advocate, and a musician with over 10 years in the industry. Today she's here to share her story of how she was misrepresented by her ex-wife and Buji Bigwa on the podcast that he had on McG's platform.
Hi, Nwabisa. How are you?
I'm very
Welcome
well. I'm
to
very
Sunday
well.
World Engage podcast. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, Mbali. Thank you.
Right.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, so you're an LGBTQI advocate, a filmmaker, and a musician with over 10 years in the industry. And I believe you've got a powerful story to tell. Let's start a bit about you, like what drives you in your work and advocacy, and where does Nwabisa come from?
Nwabisa Obi Mavuso. A lot of people know me by my second name, Obi, and I took on Obi in 2000, from 2009 when I was in first year of university, because I felt that I was finding myself, finding my identity as a Black queer woman, and I didn't have role models that I could see or I could ask questions. So I was like, let me freestyle this. And while I did that, I was doing my events and paying my way through school. But before all of that, before UOB, it was Unwabisa, Umntana ka Siyabulela, who's no longer with us, and Patricia Maxolo, who's also no longer with us. And I'm also the granddaughter of Umgwebi Mavuso, who was a lecturer and an educator until he passed away in 2006. So I am someone's daughter, first and foremost, and then I'm someone's granddaughter, and I was deeply loved by my parents until they passed in 1999. So that was me, Yabona, and Utamkulu gave me, values of you must pursue education and you must pursue knowledge. Because that's how it can actually help you to be where I am. He got to buy us, a townhouse which still stands today, Eqonce in the Eastern Cape, and also a rural house which also still stands in Pedi. So I was taught healthy masculinity from a Black man, who took his whole family and supported his whole family and married a woman from Engqushwa, who bore him a beautiful six children, of which my father was the third, Siyabulela. And I'm just grateful for everything that I learned from my grandfather and my father, because I never gave up even after his death. And I was like, okay, let me keep pushing. And that's just my genesis, yeah.
Okay, so do you believe that your father and your grandfather are the one that inspire you with your work?
Yeah, definitely. I think to really answer your question properly, yes, my those Black male role models really set a precedent, a good one for me to really pursue who I am. They really loved me, even when I was like a tomboy and it was frowned upon in society, like a little Black girl getting on trees and playing with boys. They would stand up for me and be like, no, Mia Gunabisa, this is our child. And with that, I grew into an introvert who loved pop culture. My grandfather gave me my first radio, and I loved music, from a young age. So he was very perceptive. And he was always taking care of the things that I liked. Studying your child, those things are very important. And a lot of people forget to study your child, to spend time with your child and watch them develop. What do they like? And they did that for me. So filmmaking, I watched Mzinwezinsizwa, with the family, and everything was fun. I watched a lot of like Black content, I also watched music from Black South Africans, Othando Mazwai, Rebecca Malope. I know that's such a weird But Rebecca Malope is such a G, you know. She's had such a long career, and as a black woman, like not ever embroiled in any scandals, but she keeps on winning, and that was an inspiration for me. And with filmmaking, I just had to watch a lot of like Spike Lee and Ice Cube movies growing up, and then you know with pop culture, Jam Ali Lee, and just how everything comes together, it really ignited my love for filmmaking and music. But I was like, it lacks authenticity. It's not South African. So I had to go out there and pursue my own film career. And, you know, I had to support myself post-matric, and my grandfather was not there. So I had to host events to pay for my school fees at CPUT. And I'm grateful for that because I'm where I am now from all of those events, which were queer centered, which were giving, you know, black queer people a voice to rant, to talk about the racism that we all experienced in Cape Town living there. It's not easy when you're a black child coming from the Eastern Cape, and you're trying to eke out a living in a big city like Cape Town. There's so much hostility from, you know, white people in the corporate environment as well, but also there's so much hostility towards us. We're treated like immigrants, but we are living in the same country, Yebonlando, by our own people, black people who are, you know, Cape Town based. Look at you funny when you start making moves and you're not from originally from Cape Town. So there were those hostilities that made me create like the Black Queer Social, you know, working with, you know, a lot of creatives within the LGBT community, making sure that it's an economic empowerment space. That was my vibe for it. I've always made it not ever to be about me, but to be about creating, you know, let's eat together. Let's create together. Let's do this together. So that's been the vibe. Yabo.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then let's go to May 2021.
Okay. Wow, that was quick.
You went through like a tough experience on
Yeah.
Bougie Because Queer Way of Life podcast. Can you just take us back to that moment and share like what happened from your perspective?
Yeah, so I had been watching Bougie Biko's moves, né, for like a while now, because like when you're a creative, you get to also research who's hot, but also who is hot within the LGBT community, but also within that, who has their own voice. Yeah, so I found that, you know, I used to bartend at Six in Melville in 2019, and then I would see Bougie there, you know. Sometimes I've never served him, but I would see how cool this guy is. So I would probably study him and look at him, but okay, is he a safe person for me to actually share my story with? That was my approach. And then I reached out to him and I was like, yo, Bougie, I see that you have a podcast on Mac G's platform. Would you like to actually have a conversation with me about the industry, about the work that I have done, also about maybe topics that a lot of people find as taboos? Yeah, but what Bougie didn't do though is that he didn't let me know that there would be an extra person on this panel. I was expecting it to be uBougie, not Katleho, because that was the norm for all the other previous, for the previous podcast. It was just him and Katleho, right? So I was very thrown off when it was another black queer woman by the name of Amanda Nchiba, I think whose agenda was to ask me very set up-y questions. That it's as if she was on that panel to set me up to fail and to frame me as something evil, so that she can actually, you know, get the positive vibes from that podcast. And she succeeded with that. And I wasn't equipped with that at the moment because, you know, you're dealing with lights, you're dealing with, you know, people that you've never met. I've never met Mac G personally before. But I have heard of his work as well. Hence, I actually wanted to be on the platform because I felt that for years, a lot of people were excluding me out of the LGBTI community. They were excluding me out of conversations that I felt that I had a lot to give. And I felt that was quite unfair. And Mac G's platform was the only one that was open to actually have me, you know, come out and actually engage. Bougie did not have even the professional etiquette that it took for someone to actually conduct a panel discussion. Mm-hmm. If you really check the topics, they weren't well curated by Ubuji. He also did not have a good way of managing the panelists. Like, don't talk over each other. Mm-hmm. Don't ask these weird questions. He didn't manage everything well. So from me, everything after everything aired, and then I saw like the backlash from, Bougie's from what Bougie was saying about especially polyamory, because they were actually coming at him for that. Mm-hmm. But then they were also labeling me as something that I was not, based on unsubstantiated claims saying that I am an abuser when it has never been proven that I've actually abused my ex. What I did say though, on the platform was that, look, this was my experience in my marriage. I was not happy. I had grievances based on 1, 2, 3. And if you really watch it fully, you will see that I really said that. And you will also see that I was like, I'm anti-abuse. I also said that. And even Amanda and Chiba agreed and said, yes, great, you are anti-abuse. I have been anti-GBV also through my own work, Gang 888. Is a great, conduit where anyone can start and understand my psychology. In 2019, there was weird vibes upper Echozi. There were lootings and stuff. And then I thought, you know what, let me actually write a script that, paints Black queer people as heroes instead of victims. Mm. I wanted, Black queer people to take from that film that, look, we are not at the mercy of Black men who are violent, We are also not at the mercy of, people who say horrible things about us. How about we then take our power back and claim it? And I also was like, I don't like how Uyinene was murdered and nothing has been done. So there was a lot of frustration from my experiences with homophobia, with people who are anti me, but based on nothing, based on not even asking me questions so that they get to know me properly. So, it's been just a frustrating vibe of, seeing people defame my character and just, say, oh, Bimavuso is this without, just like that. It's very like cruel, to say the least, when you watch someone use your name on social media in a way that is just not flattering, in a way where umuntu akacingeli uba you have feelings. Mm. How would you like that if someone said that about you? But people know they will just use my name, and they have done it for years. And Skengoku, they did it from 2017, 18, 19, 20. And then after 5 years, when I'm standing up and I'm not even labeling her as so bad, I didn't even use her name. But like now she uses, or she comes up with new allegations that are also not, substantiated by anything. There's no evidence to prove that I really did what she claims that I did, And the funny thing about life is that sonke, we are people, and we all understand as Black people how horrible life is to us. Imagine how horrible it is to be a Black queer woman who you keep seeing your name, being written like that, or you don't even think about the struggles that I've had in my personal life before you write those things. But how is that going to make me feel on top of everything else that is going on in the world? Yebo, Orlando, it's that kind of carelessness of not understanding or wanting to zoom into the other person as well. Umbone as umdu, because abantu also want to be seen and heard. But like, why do they shut it down for abanye abantu? They do this with a lot of Black women. Like, look at Prof. Bakeng, how they were villainizing her. A strong, educated Black woman who has a different voice. But look at how they kept villainizing and demonizing and disrespecting her. No one protected her. Ebon, it's been a lot of things. Look at Umam Winnie Mandela, the way they did her. Ebon Orlando, those have been my heroes. And Umam Sindiwe Magwana actually is my other hero. And I have her biography here because she talks about the struggles of black women, especially as someone who was born in 1943, Yenoma one of also my heroes. And I'm very fortunate that I've had her on a panel discussing diverse femininities and the fact that we all exist in a spectrum or in different shades of femininity. And mna, I have embraced my masculinity as a woman, and that is okay. So why is it that also other black women make it not okay for me to be myself? Isn't that oppressive? Isn't that what Simon Goli was fighting against all those times when he was a well-known LGBTI activist? And now we have people like Bev Ditsi who also oppress and bully other black queer women, but she claims to be an activist. What is that? What is that? Is that what Simon Goli died for? So that Bev Ditsi can actually oppress black queer women like this? So it's very tasteless the way that they have done me. It's very cruel the way that they have treated me. It's not okay to stalk and harass and defame and treat someone like they don't matter. I matter. My grandfather said I do. I still do. My father and my mother said I do. I still do. So, and it's not wrong to stand up for myself like this.
Can I just, sorry to cut you.
Yeah.
But do you feel like you were set up by personal questions on that panel, which seemed like they were aimed at blacklisting you in the creative industry?
Yeah, definitely so. And I have lived it. I have lived it. In 2015, I hosted a party at Blah Blah Bar. It's now a closed bar, but it was owned by a white man who is half Afrikaner and half German. And we have had a solid friendship. Like, we're still friends until this day. Carsten Rush is his name. He has a memoir that was published in 2019. And you know, he was one of those people who was like, you know, Obi, I see you, because I lived on Kloof in Cape Town in 2015, and I was in my third year at that time. So he would see me sometimes going down Kloof Street, and I would see his venue, like, oh, this is actually a cool venue, and this guy looks cool. So I was like, okay, let's have a business partnership. Let me host events there. So I hosted an event there, and it was so packed. Like, that was a 250 capacity venue, but we doubled the number, everyone. But with that success, I also saw that, you know, an ex of mine was there, and she was dating someone at the time. I was also dating someone else at the time. But, you know, lesbians have had this weird, uncanny obsession with my personal life and who I'm dating, that they actually purchased tickets to come to my event to actually create drama. You know, and you know, they even had fights with me, physical fights, where they were pushing me around. And one lesbian by the name of Khotato Mochele actually pushed me, and I sustained an injury. But they have always claimed that I am this big bully. But they come to my events, they bully me, they physically assault me. They are so obsessed with who I'm dating or who I'm with. They sabotage my events. They you know, they collaborate with influencers to actually write horrible things about me. And yes, on that panel, on Bougie's panel, I definitely know that Amanda Ntshiba asked those questions. Because if you also check how she was asking questions related to me, she just also couldn't wait. There was something going on in her spirit, in her vibe, that was not godly. You know, a godly woman who understands our struggles as sisters doesn't do that. You don't want to ba ukicele omnye umfazi phansi just because ufuna ukonyuka, yabona. And that's what Amanda did. She probably hangs in the circles that my ex-wife hangs in, yabona, Alando.
But you mentioned that some people would assault you, whatever, push you around. Did you open any cases against them?
No, because, you know, in 2015, I think, you know, for the most part, also, this whole thing of me coming from a family that taught me to be a peacemaker. I was taught to, but you know what? Other things, don't pursue them. Don't make hoo-has over izinto. Now I understand post-therapy, but still, I'm still undergoing a lot of therapy for some things, especially regarding my childhood. Yabona, I have learned through therapy that you need to stop being a people pleaser. I have been a people pleaser my whole life, keeping quiet when I need to actually stand up and say, no, this is wrong. I've done that, Eboyland. I've done that, and it has become a part of me into young adulthood, where you date someone where your friends are like, ah, no, you know what? She's the community thottie. Don't date her, Eboyland. And I would date her. And I laugh now because I'm just like, wow, it's been just crazy. It's just been crazy. And I'm just like, now that I have gotten to a place of healing, I'm just like, nah, like I want better for myself. I want better for myself. I want to also make other Black queer women understand that it's okay to be different and it's okay to have a different opinion. That does not make you evil. That does not make you wrong. So I have broken those cycles of being a doormat, you know, and that's the person that my ex-wife was used to. I was the one who would show up to her work with flowers, you know, making sure that her day was okay. But she won't say that. She won't say that. She won't say that she actually targeted me to marry me so that she could actually rise up, get gamalam. She won't say that. Because they don't. Because people who don't have God inside of them, people who abanqula ezinye izinto zobumnyama, are okay with doing things that go against what God wants for His own children. They are okay. And you know what? At that point in my life, when I got together with her, I saw another Black queer woman. You know, I was probably 26 at the time, and she was like 5 years younger than me. And she was sharing a room with another woman, and I saw her living situation. I was on a couch at my friend's apartment at Josie House. Frank, I can even say his name. Frank gave me a shot to actually chill and live in his flat that he shared with his sister when I first got to Joburg, which was in November 2016. Yabo. And in that time, I was hosting a party at the industry in Maboneng, my first party in Joburg. And I put a call out through my Black Queer page, and I looked for a stylist. That's how I met Ulanda Willie. I paid her for her services, and then we formed a relationship. Yeah, well, and I told her that, you know what, this is the family I come from. These are my wounds. She used that against me. She definitely used that against me. Yeah, well, me telling her that I want a family of my own, she mocked that. Definitely. Demonize me for wanting that. How do you treat someone like a horrible person who actually got you out of your bad situation, paid your rent for 6 months, paid for groceries, electricity, everything you needed, and then you turn around and you call her all these crazy things that are unsubstantiated? She opened a case in 2021 against me after I was on Mac G's podcast. When have I ever opened a case against her for all the smear campaigns that she started and that she headed up from 2017, 18, 19, 20. I never did that.
Wait, so you guys met in
16.
2016.
But because, remember, I was in Cape Town before that. When you're part of the creative clique in Cape Town, you get to also see other creatives. So I would see her in similar spaces, especially like Dillian Piri. Owned a space called The Nest. So I hosted my events sometimes there, but there was always creatives chilling in that space, and I paid my membership fee there. So oftentimes I would work from there. So she sometimes would be at this space. I knew of her, I didn't know her. Yeah, well, so I met her officially through my post Gengogu, where I was looking for a stylist because I was having a Black queer market, a market for Black queer people to come together to sell their work, books, merch, whatever. And then I was launching my clothing line, my Black queer clothing line, and I had models and everything. She was there styling the models. So that was how I knew of her at the time. So then eventually we formed a relationship and we lived together in Maboneng for a year, for 6 months before she moved out and went and lived in her own apartment in July of 2017. Nabo, if I was such a monster, why is it that I actually let her move out? If Taba, I isolated her from her friends, but her friends kept on coming to our apartment. You know?
So she moved out in 2017, you
Yes.
say. Were you guys married at the time?
Yes. We got married, Kwamanji, at Home Affairs. So we got married, and Uli Tongai, who was one of my friends at the time, was a witness. And then on her side, it was a lady by the name of Nkosazana or something, who was also friends with Andy Mkosi, an ex-business partner of mine. So that was the vibe. So I married her in February 2017, and I filed for divorce in May of 2018.
It was quick.
I know.
Okay, I just I sorry, but like you said, she mocked you about you wanting to have a family.
Yeah.
Was this before you got married or after you got married?
Okay, so when I was courting her, because now I watched my grandfather, and you know we'd have conversations about dating, you know, and also my father before he passed on when I was 8. He would sometimes just tell me that, you know, when you're pursuing a relationship with someone, or when I do, I make sure that my person, I give them the best of me, yebo. I make sure that the sweet little things that they like, I give them, yebo. So I learned romantic gestures from my father and my grandfather. And I learned that I'm a masculine woman. So by virtue of that, I took it as my role to make sure that, look, she doesn't have to need anything while I'm here, you know. I was clicking with her because we, you know, we would spend time sometimes watching cartoons, yabo, and it was easy going at first. But then after, even before we got married, I found texts on her phone where she was texting a poet by the name of Her Mentality, you know, who had actually sold books at my Black Queer Social in Joburg in 2016. Yabo. I found texts between a jewelry designer by the name of Ompile. Yabo. And I would ask her about these things. Like, you say you love me, but like, why do I find texts, you texting other people like this? It's like you're having emotional relationships with people, but you say you love me and you want to be with me. Yabo. But she would have a way to argue her side and say, no, no, they want me, I don't want them, type of thing. So I wouldn't pay attention because I'm busy, you know, most of the time. Like I was also working at Curiosity Backpackers from December 2016. And I was a bartender. I was taking care of the household. Yeah, but the money that I made from bartending was the money that I was paying rent from January to just December for me, because I lived in that same apartment even after she moved out. So I was really busy sometimes to actually see everything. But, you know, in February, we had our first argument, yabo, and we were going to our honeymoon, you know, where I paid for that. And I was like, look, let's go to Cape Town and celebrate our honeymoon. But she was arguing with me in the bus to Cape Town. We were just not on good terms. And I felt like, fuck, I made a mistake by marrying her. But I was already in this marriage. And I was like, you know what? I've never seen my parents just let each other go like that. So I was like, let me fight for this. Let me just hold up my end of the deal, even if she doesn't. Yeah, but I gave it some time. And then the arguments got worse. She was working at Stutterfords for a few months. So I would sometimes, you know, surprise her with flowers just to make her day feel better after work. Yeah, Bona. Mm. After I came off work, I would work from 7 to 3 p.m. day shift so that I could at least have time with her. Yeah, Bo. She lost her job at Stutterfords, and then I gave her a loan. And I also mentioned this loan on the podcast on Bougies. And she never paid me. Instead, she started a smear campaign and tried to play it off like, you know, I'm this stalker. But when you need to contact someone, you need to contact someone.
Mm.
When someone, you know, made an agreement with you, but they're going to pay you something. An adult knows to pay what they, you
How
know what I mean?
How much was that money?
I don't want to disclose and and make it a sensational thing, but I was raised on principle, Yokbana. If you take from someone or you borrow, you pay it back. And I'm not bitter about the money anymore. I've since let it go because I know she would never pay it. I mean, it's years later, 9 years later, since 2017. It would then move from the emotional cheating to hiding things to when she lost her job at Stutter Ford's, she would stay in the house and drink the whole day. She would take from the savings that I have been working hard for and have all these characters in our place drinking. When I call her out on it, she's like, "Oh, I'm acting like a bully." Orlando. Antagonize me when I'm tired from work, calling me all sorts of names, shouting at my face, breaking windows that I had to pay for. Well, I never said those things because you know what? When I take you as family, I want to love you, I want to protect you. But at what expense? At what expense? Because she's never protected me. She's never protected me. I've waited for her to protect me. She's never protected me.
So by the time she moved out, you guys were not on good terms, or she just said, I need to live alone.
We had a habit of her coming at me and antagonizing me, and I would forgive her. It was very passionate, very tumultuous, but I would always forgive her for coming at me. And also, there was a time from February, March, April, where she would oftentimes come and visit me at work while I was bartending. And I would watch her sometimes, like when I'm talking to female clients and I'm just striking up conversations, as a bartender should do. She would just go into fits of rage when she would see that happening. I had to check her and I'd be like, "Dude, this is my place of work though. I could get fired off of how you coming across because my boss knows that you're my partner. So obviously you are attached to me. So your behavior, iyangichaphazela type thing." And there would be instances where, I then had to, I realized that, a lot of the behaviors that she had were really affecting me emotionally and psychologically. And these were the same issues that that made me leave Cape Town because I was antagonized by lesbians in Cape Town. And I moved from Cape Town to avoid that kind of vibe. So I started to kind of reflect on month 6 or 5, and we both talked about it and we were like, "Look, our marriage is not working. It's no longer fun to it's like it's not fun for even each other individually to be around each other." So what do we do? So she was like, "Look, I can talk to my mom. She can support me, going forward. I can get a place of my own." And we agreed to that. But before our marriage collapsed, she and I, well, she actually was like, "You know what? Let's open up our marriage." And we opened up our marriage. And I was like, "Okay, cool. Maybe it's gonna make you happy." I was the first one to actually find someone outside of our marriage. So I was with some woman. I don't want to reveal her identity, but she's a daughter of a very famous author here in Johannesburg. And I started spending a lot of time with her. And I realized, you know what? This woman really inspires me to pursue a lot of my literary ambitions. Like, she's very smart. She inspires me. She speaks life into me. She cares about my ideas. She's not bored about the things that I like my wife is. And I think she got jealous of seeing me and this new relationship forming. And then we broke up not long after that. And then she then moved from our apartment to Panama House in Commissioner Street in Joburg. So with regards to every allegation that she has said against me of
I was about to ask, what were these allegations?
She has claimed that I was beating her up to a pulp. She has claimed that I was mistreating her. You know, there's a lot of them and they keep coming up, so I can't keep track of each and every one. But the main consistent one is that she labels me an abuser. And for me, I know one thing is that I was raised with love. I was raised with kindness and understanding and ukwazi umntu, yabona. I have always been flawed in terms of, like, I'm not going to be the easiest person to deal with. That's all of us, though, yabona. We have bad days. And, you know, I would see sometimes a lot of people would judge me on bad days, especially when I would organize events and stuff. And they would see me maybe in a mood or something. But like when you're organizing events, it's a high pressure environment. And the kind of work I was doing at organizing Jam That Session, organizing Black Queer Socials, it was a lot. I was dealing with suppliers. I was dealing with artists. I was dealing with the guests themselves. You know, it's a lot. I was dealing with the venue. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you can't show up and be all, you know, charismatic and happy. Yabona. And people would make comparisons, you know, of my personality. And they would compare me with my ex-business partner, Andy Mkosi. And I felt that was very unfair because most of the heavy lifting that I did at Jam That Session, it took a lot from me. And on top of that, I had to support myself through university. My family was not supporting me financially. I had to pay my way and graduate. Yabona. So with everything, you know, and seeing the allegations of me being called an abuser, it was very unfair. And I felt that most of the time I was abused by her. You know, when I really unpacked it with my therapist, I was abused by her, you know, her antagonizing me on days where I need peace and quiet, you know, her emotionally gaslighting me when we have disagreements. I couldn't talk to her and say, look, can we just talk this out? She would just stonewall and just be quiet. Ebo Orlando. And most of the time when I wanted us to really fight for our relationship, she didn't do that. But instead she would cheat. She would create an environment that was hostile, where she was drinking, bringing unsavory characters around, you know, antagonizing me when I'm in a happy mood, or, you know, when she was depressed, I would always try to help her out of whatever situation she was. If anything, I reacted to the abuse she inflicted on me. And obviously, when someone has been antagonizing you for months, you reach a boiling point, and then umdu is going to latch on to how you reacted to them. Mm-hmm. That is what reactive abuse is. That is not abuse. That is you reacting to the abuse that you've been subjected to. Mm-hmm. And for years, I was guilty. I was guilty. It tore me up inside, feeling that, you know what, I failed my ex-wife. Mm-hmm. I started personalizing the negative things she said about me. But in therapy, they said, no, you took on too much. You took on too much. You are someone's daughter, and your voice also needs to be heard. It's not just her voice that needs to be heard. Mm-hmm. You know, when you are a child, I believe some children are not taught by their parents about, okay, look, you need to take responsibility if you did something wrong. Mm. And I really do believe that she's one of those children. She never got proper discipline from her parents. Mm. She never got proper discipline from her parents. I did. And she was jealous of me. I didn't pick up on it. I didn't pick up on it. And, you know, umdu yamazi. You can feel, you can sense when umdu is lying. You can sense when umdu is not a good person. Mm. You know, they make you feel some type of way. You know, I have gone to therapy to work on the parts of me that I felt that, okay, all this trauma from losing my parents, from being abused after my parents' funerals by my grandmother that I looked up to as a guardian. You know, she took liberties with me, abusing me, taking like a splintered can of shoe polish and, you know, scratching on my back with that. Who does that to a child who just lost abazali bakhe? You know what I mean? Mm. Holding that pain in and being quiet for most of my childhood being quiet in high school, you know, at VG, I even won at Victoria Girls High School. My grandfather took me there. Yeah, well, I was so quiet and I didn't realize that it's all the pain that I've been holding in inside that made me quiet for the next 8 years of my life. I only started speaking when I was 16 years old again because I was at Victoria Girls High School and I felt safe with those girls. And finally, you know, I could speak. I could feel free. I could be myself. But then again, when I'm reclaiming more of my power and identity, I'm meeting unsavory characters in Cape Town and I'm being bullied for being me. That's not okay.
Mm.
That's not okay. And defamation is defamation. I don't care what people say. Defamation is defamation.
I was about to say that since the police found you not guilty,
yeah,
like all these events, I'm sure they affected your reputation.
Yeah.
So how did you cope with the defamation and what steps did you take to keep, you know, keep pushing forward with your work?
Yeah. It was tough, actually, post the first smear campaign, you know, in 2017. It was tough, actually, engaging with people around me in the creative industry. People looked at me some type of way based on one person's allegations that were never true. They never checked in with me. And I was very disappointed when my ex-business partner never, not once, ever called me and said, "Obi Uraiti, is this true?"
Mm.
You know, it's like that whole notion of you really start to see who's real with you when ish hits the fan, you know, when you're alone and everybody's calling you a monster. Not a lot of people were kind to me from 2017, late 2017, 2018, 2019. I coped by writing. I coped by reading. Umamsindiwe Magona was a voice from a healthy grandmother that I never had.
Mm.
And I got her through reading her book, Lebo. I would go to the Johannesburg Library every day and I would just want to find a place where I would feel like I belong, because when I'm out there, I'm being treated like I'm such a demonic person and it's not even been proven, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, how much worse, you know, going into clubs and stuff and, you know, people would actually even ban me at clubs. I was banned at Kitchener's. They would actually throw me out at Kitchener's and say, "You're not welcome here." Mm-hmm. And I coped by trying to find peace within myself. That's why I then felt that, you know what, let me start healing for myself. Therapy started 2018. And then 2019, I started, I signed up for counseling through the VITS counseling sessions that they offer that are free. I got a therapist there. And then I did the same in 2020. You know, I have always been making sure that let me show up better, you know. I worked on my career. I honed my gifts of writing scripts that uplift Black women, you know, Gang 888, where five Black queer women are fighting against all of these injustices, homophobia, GBV, you know, taking back your power. I started writing songs that really are an ode to Uma Mwini Mandela, who's always been a hero of mine. Ndizakubonisa, the EP, I wrote a lot about that because that was the year Uma Mwini Mandela also died. So I penned a song there called Ilizwe Letu, where I also was like RIP to Akumzi Jezile because he died also in that same year.
Mm.
As much as it also spoke about the issues I dealt with in my own marriage, and it also spoke about the injustices I also experienced through the police system. You know, when you go through the police system in this country as a Black queer masculine woman, you have another thing going for you. They will laugh at you. Yeah, boy. They will laugh at you while they see how traumatized you are by this same person who has claimed to love you. Yeah, boy. So I was ostracized. I definitely was put on the wayside. But I was like, you know what, even with that, I don't need their validation. Let me work on myself. And then luckily, I was flown to Zurich, Switzerland in 2020 and performed on an international stage and performed in Dizakubonisa. And that was me reclaiming my power. That was me reclaiming my power. And I will keep on being myself. I will keep on ensuring that these injustices that happen to people, especially Black queer women, they don't continue to happen. People have this hatred for stud lesbians. They have this hatred for them, thinking that Tina Sizenza amadoda and stuff. Like, we're not here trying to be men, actually, FYI. Some of us are actually here acknowledging that we have vaginas. We are not the percent that goes and, and undergoes surgery to become men. That's a different topic. And still, I do not shun trans people because I have friends who are trans. I've had a friend who is a trans woman now, who was a man that I used to go to high school with. She was supportive of me throughout this whole ideal. She showed me so much empathy and love and kindness when a lot of people were homophobic. They used that interview that I did with Ubuji to be also homophobic towards me. And we live in a very unequal society. Siyayazi, it's very unequal. So again, xa ushayinayo wena and you live in your life and you have the audacity to say, look, I'm here, I am a gift, people are gonna be like, I gift kabani. And they're gonna try, you know what I mean? They're gonna try and really humble you. And they do this a lot to Black women.
Can I just ask, through everything that happened, did Buji reach out to you when you were getting the backlash? Have you spoken since then? And also, how then did you feel seeing him being accused of cheating?
Karma, because he didn't handle me well. So, when you F up with God's children, it's not gonna be a year iphele. I was laughing. And I'm actually not even going to be ashamed of that. Because how dare wena bougie ungamprotecti umntu that was coming to your house? Because like a podcast is essentially your house. You accepted me coming there. So now I was open to an environment that was safe for me. It was karma that happened to Ubuji. It was karma, but we also live in a very hypocritical society. South Africa is very hypocritical. Ubuji is now active and thriving, but he has a very open case that was opened. He was in jail. I've never been in jail for any of these allegations that this delusional woman has said against me. But look at Bougie being in circles that shunned me. Black men are forgiven before Black women are forgiven in this country. Black men are forgiven first and with much more passion before a Black woman can get that grace. You will not get that grace, especially as a Black masculine woman. They will forgive a Black feminine woman quickly because she is conventional. She is what society says is normal in a woman. But when it comes to me, because of their hatred, their homophobia, their insecurities, it's all in one. So they will be like, "Masimcinezele," and let's not forgive her, because how dare she?
Do you also feel like the LGBTQ space, you guys, because we see a lot of same-sex relationships, they always end, regardless whether it's lesbians or gays or whatever, they always end in drama. Why do you think that's the case?
I don't think it's an LGBT thing. I think it's a everybody thing. Relationships are messy, dude.
I know.
It's not about sexuality. It's just,
But don't you feel like I'm a woman, you're a woman? Obviously, we have moods, we have,
Of course, of course.
So when we fight, it's a woman against a woman.
It's messier. It's messier, but the thing about that is that every woman isn't the same. Like we need to give grace to people. It doesn't matter who it is, let's give grace to each other. Sometimes a good man will date a very horrible woman. Like, look at the that show that was on Netflix, Unkateko, and he dated Ukanya. Awkward pairing, horrible pairing. She was definitely something else. Ebaland. And she preyed on Kateko's weaknesses and vulnerabilities and weaponized. And Nkateko was dumb enough, sorry to say, to have a child by that woman. Now she has to, he has to deal with that monster every time. Ebaland. So relationships are messy. That's one example. People are divorcing all the time, you know? Straight relationships, you know? We see tabloids all the time of straight people going at it with each other. It's not just a lesbian thing. But because, you know, people don't understand the LGBT community and there's no true context or there's no one way for us to define what the LGBT community is and how we feel about izinto. I think a lot of straight people think that the LGBT community is here to police people. It's just that, no. I think a lot of LGBT community members have been through so much with the hate crimes and, you know, we most times stud women are killed at an alarming rate and nothing has been done. The hate bill hasn't been passed yet. So it makes it okay for people to murder black lesbian women. It makes it okay for people to murder black gay men. R.I.P. to Lindo, was it Lindo Zwane or Cele from Durban, who was murdered in 2019 or 2020. R.I.P. to him. R.I.P. to a lot of black lesbians who have been getting murdered left, right, and center.
I just want to touch on this one where you're talking about people getting killed. There's a recent one. I think if it was not this year, last year, of a guy who was murdered by a guy that they met at Gwamaimai.
You see.
And the man had initially thought,
oh my God,
he's a woman.
Okay.
And the friend warned her to say, tell this person that you are this. Do you feel like sometimes, I don't know how to phrase it.
Deception.
But yes. Do you feel like sometimes people are get themselves killed because of deception and all of that? Because there's a lot of that that's happening.
Okay. Firstly, let me actually answer that by actually saying, well, no one deserves to be killed. No matter how deceived you felt by that person, you have to first have so much strong emotional regulation that you can understand, but oh shit, I'm being deceived, and walk away from that. Go to the people that you're attracted to, because now you know, you have this information of truth that this was actually a man, right? So then you can walk away from that, right? Let's not also give murderers and rapists, an off day where they can't face the music.
To say, okay, but he was deceived.
No, it's wrong to deceive someone. Also, don't get me wrong on that. I've been deceived plenty times by women on dating apps, on dates, but I never was like, oh, let me murder someone. Let me R-word them. You know what I mean? I've never felt, I just was like, oh, okay, it's part of the game. It's part of the game. When you are dating, you will be played with. Got that, guys, I think we need to also understand. But then I guess when you are a black man and your identity centers on masculinity that is like traditional, and then you met with someone who is way different, and then they reveal themselves as not the same gender, you know, I could imagine, because I'm not a guy, I can imagine how that makes you feel as a man. Then you find out Usbahle was actually
Usipho.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And then you feel pissed off because your friends will be like, oh, you know what I mean? Because guys have that thing. And then it fuels this rage. And
then egos.
These things that are just, that could have really been unpacked by them calling each other out instead of ubaselana about bullshit, you know what I mean? So that's how I feel about it. Nobody deserves to be murdered because of, you know, a silly little thing of deception. We've all been duped, guys, in this dating, but it doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
So what's the one key message, like, you would want to tell someone at home to take away about breaking free from toxic relationships and building healthier ones?
For me, I know for a fact in my young 20s, when I was a baby stud, you know, because I was a baby stud from like 2009, 10, 11, 12, I was still being initiated on what is being a stud? What's a healthy approach of dating as a Black queer person post-colonialism, you know, post everything that we have been through? So I would say, first, understand the country that you come from, that you were born in. Understand who the people were who fought for you. Understand Simon Gorley, you know, who really fought for Black gays and lesbians to have a voice today. He was the one who met Nelson Mandela and said, look, kule Bill of Rights, le ipalayo, Mr. Mandela, there will be no more discrimination based on your sexual orientation. 1994. Simon did that. So I would say, learn your history, learn the heroes of your country, learn your rights as a human being, and then that will actually embolden you to step up and take up space, because you belong here. You belong here. Yeah, well, your ancestors did not make a mistake by making sure that you came here. But also, if you're spiritual, you know that you called yourself into existence. You said, I want to be here. So live and mean it. And don't look for acceptance from straight people. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yes.
They're not begging here. This is your life. You know what I mean? You're human like them. So take up space and be yourself. So that's what I would say. And with that, with toxic relationships, the thing about dating is that you have to be played with a bit for you to have a voice and to understand, oh, this is what this is. This is this behavior. And then I can stay away from that. But if you don't want to do the trial and error approach, you need to first be able to sit with yourself, understand yourself fully, and say, okay, this is who I am. These are the values I like. So therefore, I would like those values in my partner. And give yourself at least a year to know the person. But is this person really for real? Akazo sucha up, you know, the minute they sign the marriage contract. Exact opposite. You know what I mean? And that's what I went through. So I would really advise Abantu to know yourself. Know the person that says they love you. Do they love you for real? What is love? What are your roles in this relationship? Who takes care of what? So that ungabi bitter and whatever.